This is the coronavirus update interview of January 6th, 2021 on Gila Mimbres Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico. I'm Jamie Newton, your host for today. My guest is Dr. Rene Dupre, a public health consultant who lives here in Silver City. Dr. Dupre, it's good to have you back with us on coronavirus update.
It's great to be here again, Jamie.
Data from the end of December 2020 show that Grant County's rate of growth of infections was the third highest among counties in New Mexico. The county is classified by the State Department of Health as very high risk, or red, in the red to green framework. The rate of average daily cases is six times higher, and the test positivity rate about 50% higher than the criteria for classification to a lower level of risk. So, Dr. Dupre, why is the coronavirus still surging here in Grant County, and what do our listeners need to know about it?
Well, if I had the complete answer to that question, I could wave a magic wand and we could figure it out and it could all go away. But what we do know is that there are multiple different reasons why it's still surging. First of all, it's a bad virus. We may have some of the virus that we're seeing that started in the UK that seems to be spread more easily. We don't know, but we just do know that this thing is acting in ways that are very concerning. But more importantly, in terms of the things we can do, our individual actions, we've been preaching since the beginning of this to follow the three W's: watch your distance, wear your mask, and wash your hands. Those are three simple things that anybody can do to reduce their risk of infection and reduce the risk of passing it on to someone else if they are infected. And we're not doing that great at that. I was at Albertson's the other day. I saw at least 10, 20 people walking around with their masks down over their noses. We haven't been doing great about messaging about the hand washing because we've gotten so focused on masks. So we need to remember all of those things. And really, we're also experiencing some COVID fatigue. You know, we have been doing this for a really long time. I want to reach out and give my friends a hug when I see them. And I'm sure everybody else does. And we just finished the holidays. We saw a spike after Thanksgiving, especially in extended families that gathered when people traveled from other areas. We predicted then that we would see Christmas funerals, and we got them. So we're expecting the same to happen now with the Christmas and New Year's holiday. We're seeing a spike already from Christmas. We'll be seeing the New Year's spike coming up soon. And so, you know, we're human. We wanted to socialize and get together and celebrate holidays. Tourism and travel remain a big risk for us. Not only is it when people come to our area as tourists and maybe bringing the virus with us, but it's when we go to other places, when we go to El Paso to shop, because that's where the big stores are. When we go out and we mix in those places where there's a high rate of virus, we're often bringing it home with us. Delivery systems are necessary, but they put us at risk. I mean, where are all the things that are stocking our shelves coming from? Can't say that, you know, we can't stop that or we would be in a whole world of hurt, but we can make it less risky to do that. But really, one of the key things I want to emphasize is that this virus is spreading in our homes. If one person in a home gets it, we see it traveling rapidly through the rest of the home. Now, I grew up in a family with four other siblings, so we had seven people in the household. And we always played round robin with all of the colds and flus that came around. This is no different. It's just a little bit more infectious. So what I really am encouraging people to do is right now, today, make a plan for what you would do if someone in your household were to get sick. And just as you should have a plan for what would happen if a fire were to happen, what you would do if any other natural disaster would happen, if you have COVID-19 in your household, that is a natural disaster. And you need to have a plan for it. And finally, there's another reason which we're not really, we don't talk about it a lot, but when you test positive, If you are still worried about paying the rent, if you're still worried about grocery shopping and getting out there, it's really hard to quarantine. So someone in your home, they haven't tested positive, just it was you who tested positive, right? They go grocery shopping. Well, guess what? They don't know it, but they're infected, so they're bringing it out. So we're spreading it in our homes, and then we're also spreading because we're not following those quarantine orders. And often, and I'm not saying this in a blaming way, it's often because we don't know that there are resources out there. So I called today with some amazing people. There's assistance for rent. There's assistance for paying for utilities. There's assistance for food. It is there and available to you. And so if you do test positive, you know, first of all, some people are not even getting tested because they're afraid they'll have to stop working if they're sick. Get tested, stay home. And I want to really emphasize that Grant County has the resources to have your back. We've got your back if you're sick.
Dr. Dupre, your comments take me back to a central point made by Dr. Anna Rogers, whom I interviewed last week. She works in northwestern New Mexico, McKinley County, which has been very, very hard hit by the coronavirus. And when I asked what people in the community could best do to be supportive to healthcare professionals, she said, essentially, don't get sick and don't make anybody else sick. Prevention is so vital. And that's what we all need to keep in mind, that it's much more difficult once, as you just pointed out, once the disease is spreading in your home, it's much more difficult to cope than if nobody in your household got it in the first place. So wear a mask, watch your distance, wash your hands, all those simple things in force. Let's shift to the Grant County Emerging Infectious Diseases Task Force. You're a co-founder and a coordinator of the task force, and that's a planning and action network under the Grant County Community Health Council to strengthen the community's response to both the direct and the indirect impacts of the pandemic and any infectious diseases that may come to us in the future. So, Dr. Dupre, what's the role of the task force in the coronavirus crisis, and how does the task force work?
Well, I'll back up a little bit just to talk about how it happened, because I think that how it happened really explains what its role is. So there were a group of us that started meeting early on, speaking with a couple of our county commissioners when we saw this thing coming. You know, it was about January when I started going, oh my goodness, we might be in trouble. And by the end of January, I said, oh my goodness, we are in trouble. And so we started talking with just sort of a core group, which grew slightly. And then pretty soon we started to recognize that there were a lot of groups working to address COVID-19 in our community. But they weren't working together. That there was one group over there that was trying to do something, another one over there. And so what we said was, how powerful would it be if we brought all of those groups together? And not only if we brought them together, but if we started asking them to share their ideas and their resources. And so what we did is we said, well, let's go out and look at what are some of the effective models of community organizing that could work. And we settled on one that's called the collective impact model. It started out of Stanford back in 2011. And the core elements of that are that we have a common agenda. We have a problem and we collectively define it. We share measurement. We share the ways in which we determine whether we're doing well or not. And then we're coordinating our efforts to maximize the end result. And lots of communication, and finally having some sort of backbone support for all of the activities. And so we said, this is something we can do. So we started thinking about all the different sectors and the ways in which COVID-19 is impacting our community. So what would happen if we line up all these resources? Because we also knew, as we are finding out right now, that this pandemic was going to stress our available resources in this county in a way that has never been stressed before. It's stressing our healthcare workforce, it's stressing our businesses, it's stressing our schools. We've never gone through something like this, and we need everybody. We need everybody in this county to be part of the solution. And that's what the task force is about. So our focus is dual. First of all, we are focusing on reducing the spread of the virus and the spread of disease itself. We want to reduce the disease, the suffering, the disability, and death that's caused by the virus, and preserve the capacity of our healthcare system, not only so we can treat COVID patients, but so we can treat you if you get in a car wreck, if you have a heart attack, so that we can still provide healthcare services. So that was our first focus. And then we want to look at some of the secondary impacts, which many of which have been predicted in previous work we've done in pandemics, but some of which we are surprised by or weren't really expecting. Mental health is a huge, huge problem right now. We're all under stress. And even those of us who've never even considered having mental health issues before are really, you know, anxiety, depression. I spoke with my dentist the other day who said, see more cracked teeth than ever before. That's one of those things, who would have predicted it? Cracked teeth are one of the side effects of what's going on. Our kids who are missing a lot of social interactions in their schooling, we need to get our economy back on our feet. So those are some of the things that we're working on. How do we do that? So that's some of the task force's role. But ultimately, you know, our goal is to mount a nonpartisan, evidence-based, data-driven response to this unprecedented threat. And we have an amazing group of people at the table, each and every one of whom has just been essential. And so one example of our big accomplishments is the vaccine rollout. And that has happened because we have put a whole bunch of healthcare organizations and public health together in one Zoom room week after week after week. They have been meeting for months, and they've addressed issues like healthcare workforce shortages. They've addressed issues like, how do you quarantine dementia patients? So, you know, really nuts and bolts things. And as soon as the vaccine became available, they started working together to create a really impressive rollout. I'm going to predict that by the end of this week, in just our 1A population, we will have vaccinated close to 1,000 people in this county. That's incredible. And it is thanks to some really, really hard, dedicated work and these people coming together, representing these organizations and working together to make sure that we're using every dose of vaccine that we possibly can in this county.
Dr. Dupre, FDA approval of several vaccines after rigorous clinical testing has brought new optimism about overcoming the coronavirus crisis this year, 2021. So some practical questions. In New Mexico, who can get vaccinated? How do we sign up? Is it really cost-free, fully paid for by the state? How do we know the vaccines are safe and effective? And just how immune does a vaccinated person become? How fully protected are we? How long does protection last?
Well, we could do an entire course on that one question, but let me hit some of the high points. So who can get vaccinated right away? First thing that we're trying to do is protect our frontline workers, those who are working day in and day out with people who are sick with COVID-19. So all hospital personnel with direct patient care, all those frontline healthcare workers came first. And now in our county, we're able to move out into law enforcement, into others who are having direct contact with the public as often as we can. The next phase will be people like grocery store clerks who are at really big risk, and other frontline essential workers. So, and that's our phase 1A. We're still in phase 1A. We'll be moving out to other populations. I would say that if you're in the general population, not super high risk, I would expect to be able to get the vaccine somewhere in the spring or summer. Optimism says end of March. Others I've seen June. I will say our rollout in New Mexico and our rollout in Grant County has been one of the best in the nation. So we're doing well. So that's in terms of the who. Priorities are determined by lots of different influences, and both federal and state guidelines are being followed by our community, with the caveat that we're rural and we have specific needs. But they're determined basically working with a medical ethicist, working with other groups on the ground to try to determine not who's most deserving of the vaccine, but by vaccinating this population first, how can we most protect those who are most vulnerable to disability and death because of it? And also, how can we ethically protect those who are in the front lines trying to save other people? So yes, it is free and it is paid for by a combination of state and federal dollars. So vaccination is free. Safety, this vaccine, we know that this vaccine has been developed, or these vaccines, I should say, have been developed very quickly. It's been less than a year since the start of the pandemic in the United States that we, you know, it's been around for about a year, but we really started seeing spread less than a year ago, and vaccine development started shortly after that. But we have to remember that researchers have been working on coronavirus vaccines for many, many years. SARS-1 was a coronavirus. MERS is a coronavirus. The prediction that a coronavirus would cause pandemic disease has been around for at least 15 years. And as a result, scientists have been working to develop vaccines for the coronavirus family of viruses. This particular virus, just like flu changes every year, happens to have certain characteristics. And so that's what they've developed in the past year. So they've been tested extensively by the FDA. And so far, they seem as safe as we possibly can see. That we've had a few allergic reactions, and that's about it.
In terms of the immunity conferred, they make it much less likely that a person will get the coronavirus once they've had two doses. But you've said that it's not clear that a vaccinated person cannot infect others. Can you just add to that?
Absolutely. At this point, what has been tested with these vaccines is whether someone develops symptoms of disease if they're infected. So we want to differentiate between infection and disease, right? So you can be infected. We've found out that people can be infected with COVID and not show any symptoms, right? So we know that that can happen. With the vaccine, that's even more so. You could become infected. And we think that this is how it works, that you know, because this part has not yet been tested. What we do know is that even if you're infected, your body can fight it with the help of the vaccine. It's about efficacy is coming in at about 95%, which is really, really high, much higher than a flu vaccine, which is actually really admirable and surprising in a good way. But so the idea is that you could be infected. You don't want to go home and give grandma a hug if you've been vaccinated and you've been exposed, because you could still be infected and pass it on to her. Now, once we get grandma vaccinated and you vaccinated, that hug's going to become a lot safer. And that's what we're working for when we're trying to hit herd immunity. And so the projections are anywhere from 75 to 85% of our population has to be vaccinated for us to get herd immunity. And yes, a vaccine is a much better and safer way to herd immunity and much less deadly way than just letting everybody get sick.
And we will know much more about this as the weeks and months go by and we gain experience with these vaccines. We will have guests later on for coronavirus update who will bring us updates about the efficacy with experience of the vaccinations. You've been listening to the coronavirus update interview for January 6, 2021. Dr. Rene Dupre, thanks so much for speaking again to our listeners.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Marcus Hansen, our audio engineer and producer of Coronavirus Update. And thank you for listening and for supporting your community radio station. For Gila Mimbres, Community Radio, and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, I'm Jamie Newton. Be safe and be well.